Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Sally Elcordi, and welcome to Public Advocate Radio. My guest this afternoon is Tom Renz. Tom Renz is an attorney who has taken on the very difficult task of the lawsuit, which is challenging, does an emergency exist? And for the people who claim there is an emergency, to prove it. And this is a completely new tact. I'm going to bring Tom Renz on right now, attorney at law.
Hi, how you doing, Sally?
Well, I just watched your interview with John Rappaport. That was engaging. I should put it in the comments so that people see that. But I can't help but wonder, as an attorney, what did you think when they said there would be no culpability in terms of restitution, you know, liability, for the results of anything to do with COVID?
Yeah, well, I kind of thought, I guess we'll see. You know, this whole thing seems to be based on nonsense to me. And it will be really interesting to see how some of that plays out in court. The idea that they can, I guess, legislate away liability for wrongdoing is kind of questionable at best. But we'll see how that all goes. We're not quite that far in the case. Right now, we just want to get our freedom back.
Right, right. But, you know, something stinks when you have to exonerate yourself before the fact. I mean, if nothing else, if you're looking for guilt, that would be a good place to look. Anyway, so why have you taken the tack that you have? Because it's different than all others.
Well, it is a little bit different. You know, we looked at this from a constitutional perspective, right? And ultimately, the biggest issue that people were running into when they were challenging this, and there's been a lot of lawsuits around the country on this, but the thing they kept running into is state police power. And state police power has been interpreted to allow the state to do certain things to keep people safe. And none of us are going to argue against the idea that the state can declare a local emergency if there's a tornado that goes through a town and they, you know, they need to keep people safe while they're cleaning up. You know, if there's a riot and they need to declare an emergency and get people off the street, no one's going to argue that that's wrong. The thing is, though, is it's one thing to declare a local emergency, take whatever actions you need to take, and then move on. It's another thing entirely to say, well, we've got an emergency, and this is just going to go on forever. It's the new normal. We're going to work under an emergency declaration now, and that means that we, the executive branch of the state, can do whatever we want forever. And we don't need to worry about any of the constitutional protections or legislative protections that were there before the emergency. And that's kind of what's happened. So to get around the emergency, the police powers, we needed to challenge the validity of the emergency declaration itself. And that really comes down to, is there really an emergency here? Is there? Prove it. Show me. And that's what we're saying.
Well, I've done about 10 blogs on this issue. I'm sure you have oceans of evidence, and that you'll find even more uncovered in your discovery process. But the discovery process is something I want to talk to you about, because I was reading an old article, which has been removed so many times I've lost count. It's called "The Vaccine Hoax is Over." And it talks about a Freedom of Information Act disclosure that revealed things about vaccines that were not official, okay? Even though everybody knew them, there was no actual finding. But in this article, it said that Obama had said that you could not just say you can't have it. You can say it never existed. And I can't help but wonder, there's a recent lawsuit that they said the FDA had no documents. And I thought, I bet they do. And then I read this and I thought, well, I don't know if that was ever enacted. But it was Obama that if you had documentation, this article was in 2012, that you could say you didn't, that it didn't exist. And I'm wondering, could that affect this case?
Well, it seems to be kind of a common tactic with FOIA requests. And, you know, if you don't ask for the right document the right way, they seem to say it doesn't exist. But that's a little bit different, though. Okay, so discovery and the Freedom of Information Act are different animals. The Freedom of Information Act is about people getting access to information. There doesn't have to be an allegation in a court or anything like that. A discovery in a court case, that happens after there's been a well-founded allegation put out there. And basically the idea of discovery is, listen, we're in court. The most important thing that can happen is we can get to justice, right? And what is justice? Justice means we look at the facts and we apply the law. And it comes down where it comes down. You know, in theory, that's an unbiased thing. And it means that we get to what is right under the law. And that's what lawyers are supposed to work towards. So under discovery, they can't dodge some of these things. In fact, under discovery, they actually have an affirmative duty to tell us where there's relevant information. Now, it's not a fishing expedition. We can't just ask for every piece of evidence in the universe. It's got to be relevant to our case. But ultimately, if it is relevant to our case, they are not supposed to hide it in discovery. That is a big no-no in the law. So we don't have to produce a Freedom of Information Act request. We just simply have to get the relevant data, which we can request through the discovery process, and go from there. And as I said, there's actually an affirmative duty, which means that it's your responsibility as counsel to share the relevant data to a certain extent, to make sure that we know that it's there and we have the ability to ask for it. Now, I will tell you, it certainly seems like the state of Ohio is going to go out of its way to try and prevent us from getting any information that we can. I find that to be really interesting, and I think it's very telling because, as we've been saying from the beginning, if you don't have anything to hide, why are you hiding it?
Isn't that what they say to us in terms of censorship and things like that? Right?
Absolutely.
Isn't that what they say to us all the time?
Absolutely. I think it's an unbelievable thing. You know, the state of Ohio could make this all go away real quick. If they were doing what they've done based on good faith, all they have to do is make the information public. You know, give us the real raw information and let independent people who aren't making money off of it evaluate it. That's all you got to do. If we're wrong about this, if my side of this is wrong, well, then you've made us look silly and we just go away. It's a really, really easy thing to do, but politically, they keep letting me beat them up politically over this, and you know, I don't see any information yet. So I don't understand that. I mean, well, I do understand it. If you don't have anything to hide, you don't hide it, and clearly, it would appear that they have something to hide. So.
So you're trying to establish intent, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, we don't have to do that in this case. All we have to do is show that our constitutional rights have been violated. What I'm trying to establish, it's a little bit different. In a criminal case, we got to show motive, right? We got to show that there's some sort of a motive involved. And I'm going to tell you, thank God I don't have to do that in this case. The reason I say that is because, you know, just doing what I've done to investigate and to research this case, some of the tips I've got on motives are absolutely horrendous. And frankly, I'm just glad I don't have to get into that because if half of what I've heard is true, it's terrifying and I just don't want anything to do with it. But I don't have to get into it and I don't even need to care about what the motive is. All I have to do is say, listen, what you've done is unconstitutional and let me show you why it's unconstitutional. And if we show that it's unconstitutional and they can't show that it is constitutional, well, then we win.
Okay. Now, a lot of people, their lawsuits have pertained solely to the Constitution. And I would like to bring something to your attention if you're unaware of it, because Judge Napolitano said this was the most important ruling of the past century. And it had to do with a lawsuit Sheriff Mack and five other sheriffs were suing to say that an assignment that was given to the states didn't belong, that the federal government could not charge the states with this duty, okay? And what came out of it, though, was something that kind of didn't even pertain to the lawsuit, which was really kind of weird for me, but it pertains exactly to this situation. And that is that the Constitution protects us from even the best intentions, which, you know, when it comes to a health emergency, it's all about intentions. You know, even the best intentions,
right,
it protects us from. And it also protects us from the crisis of the day.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Or scandal of the day in this case, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But,
well, I agree. I agree.
So,
you know, that's what the Bill of Rights says.
And pertinent. Huge and pertinent. I think you could do a lawsuit just on those two issues, you know, just on those two findings.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, so ultimately the Constitution is there every day, but when it's most important is when there's a crisis, because it's when there's a crisis that we're most willing to give up or to lose our rights, and that's when we have to hold on to them tightest. I mean, you just cannot give up your constitutional rights because there's an emergency. Now, we can understand a very temporary and very limited limitation being placed on certain things, you know, for just to get through something for, you know, a week. But there's a big difference between a week and 6 months. And they're not even trying to hide this, okay? They have no intention of giving up this power. They call it the new normal. This is not the new normal. When did Mike DeWine or Governor Cuomo or any of these, when did they get the authority constitutionally to ignore the rest of the other branches of government, to ignore the rights given to us in the Bill of Rights and other amendments, to ignore the rights laid out for us in the Constitution itself? How do they have authority to do that? What makes them think that they can just blow this whole thing off and be kings of their state? Yeah, it makes no sense.
Well, I actually put a video underneath this screen that talks about how bad it can get. And I do believe the worst case scenario, not in our country, but in the Philippines, is that you can be shot if your mask is not correctly on your face. Not that you are not wearing a mask, but that it is not correctly on your face. You can be shot. Okay, that blew
wow.
my mind. Yeah, and because I made a list of all the kind of atrocities that are going down in Australia, in America, in the UK, but this one takes the cake. And but also, there was a video that I also included that I want you to look at, and it's basically the four stages of how narcissists capture their prey, and it pertains in every regard to this scenario. It's amazing. So I'd like you to look at that too. I've been thinking a lot about it.
Yeah, well, I'm looking. I see you've got some very interesting things here, and I'm just looking as we speak. And I'll be very interested. You know, I haven't had the chance to go through some of the videos, but it's incredible the kind of psychological manipulation and approach that's occurred here, right? So, and we actually talk a little bit about this in the case. You know, we bring up the fact that, and I never knew this prior to this case. It's new information to me, and frankly, had you told me this before I got to the case, I would have probably said, I think you're off. I just don't know that I believe you on this, right? But fear and the use of fear to motivate people is actually a well-studied and almost central aspect of public health. You know, you've got these people who are, you know, they're doctors, they're scientists. They've studied health, they've studied people, they've studied behavior. And they found over the years that the use of fear not fear like a horror movie, but fear like, you know, let's kind of create some anxiety in the people, is very effective in manipulating people to take steps that they might not otherwise take. And that kind of approach is definitely being used here. There's really no question about it in my mind that a lot of our elected officials, a lot of our public health agencies are using the intentional, I guess, imposition of fear on people as a means of controlling them. You know, if you don't wear your mask, you're going to kill other people and you're going to die and, you know, you're a monster and, you know, this disease is going to kill everybody and it's causing all this death and chaos. But, you know, the problem is they say that, but then if you look at their numbers, it's just not true. The numbers for this disease really aren't much different than the yearly flu. It's just shocking.
Right. And every day the evidence is with you. You know, Dr. Ron Paul announced within a week two disclosures just directly from the CDC. And, of course, the latest one caused five states to, well, one state had already opened up, South Dakota, but Florida and three others all opened up. Five states are now mask-free and regulation-free. And I don't know if you studied how they came to that point, but the latest revelation from the CDC is why the governor of Florida said, okay, it's over, you know, back to the old normal. We like the old normal.
Yes, but, yes, we do.
The American Association of the Association of Physicians and Surgeons, I was listening to their annual conference the other day, and I didn't realize how strict they had become at them until I heard the president give her opening speech. And we all know that these doctors, like the frontline doctors, they're fired from their jobs, their licenses are challenged. But the president said that, and I'll give you this video too, that there, if you practice medicine outside the realm of what they consider to be urgent, I guess, there's some kind of guideline that I don't know about that prevents doctors from tending to their patients unless it's within a very rigid guideline. If you care for your patient outside that guideline, you can be fined $10,000 or imprisoned.
Well, I'm not sure which guideline that is, but I can tell you that one of the things that we've seen is exactly what you said. I mean, there's been so many doctors. You got to understand, when we talk about the good guys, bad guys on this, and I guess that's not a great way to characterize it, but it's what I'm going to use for right now. Because if you're advocating taking away people's rights, I'm not sure that you could be called a good guy. But, you know, ultimately, the doctors who are on the front line, the doctors who are taking care of people, you know, these are people that they're almost invariably working for huge healthcare organizations because there's very few independent organizations left. And, you know, these organizations are simply not tolerating any dissent. If you speak out, you lose your job. I mean, I've heard this again and again and again. And it's really an unbelievable thing. I mean, what we're seeing is just mind-blowing. But I think you really got to follow the money on this, right? So, you know, what happened here? So we start out and we've got this dread disease, and the Congress passes an $8 billion funding bill for the CDC to study this disease. Now, I've said this before and I'll say it again. If you give me $8 billion to study a disease, do you really think I'm going to come back and tell you, hey, don't worry about it, there's nothing to see here? It's ridiculous. That's not going to happen. So they come back and they tell them how dangerous it is. Well, then, you know, we get a couple cases here in the States. And, yeah, we do some really dumb things, like putting sick people in nursing homes where the only population of people that are vulnerable to this disease live. And so we get a few deaths. Well, we get those deaths, and by the way, the deaths are nowhere near the 200,000 number that they keep touting. We've shown in the case that that's a lie. We know it's a lie. They've said it's a lie. That number is the number of deaths of people who have died with COVID-19, arguably, not from COVID-19. So, first of all, we don't know if they actually died with COVID-19 because they didn't have to get an accurate test or a test that works to determine if they actually had COVID-19 when they died. And second of all, according to the CDC, the Director of Public Health for the state of Illinois, and even Dr. Birx, that number is people suspected to have died with it. So if you get hit by a bus but you had COVID, you could, under CDC guidelines, be included in that number because you died with COVID. Even though it was the bus that killed you, you had COVID in your system at the time, so they're going to list it as a contributing factor. But you follow the money, right? So the CDC gets more money for funding. The big hospital systems are running tests. They're running testing groups. They're running, they get a 20% increased Medicare reimbursement. They get all these different things, right? All these different streams of money. So, you know, they're not really interested in shutting this down because they have a lot of alternative types of income coming in. The hospitals themselves, we keep hearing, are fairly empty. And so they keep laying people off. And you say, well, why would you not be speaking out if you're laying people off? Well, because remember, now we're getting our money on tests and things like that. It's a lot cheaper to hire someone to run a test than it is to hire a doctor to actually treat patients. So the people at the top, the people running these big healthcare systems, are not losing a dime. It is hard on some doctors and some of the people at the bottom of the totem pole, but you got to follow the money, right? So the money seems to be really kind of at the root of a lot of this. Like I said, I don't have to get into motives. It doesn't really matter. But because ultimately it's unconstitutional regardless of the motive. You just can't place an entire state under house arrest and lock them in their house or tell people that they can't go visit their loved ones in the nursing home. Or, you know, I mean, pick your horrible, horrible thing that the states have done, and you know, it's probably unconstitutional.
Well, you brought something up to me on the phone, and again to John Rappaport, and that is, where are the people stepping forward? Where are the lawyers? I'd like to ask that question here in New York, because I think this should happen here as well. So where are the lawyers? I don't know. Why haven't they stepped forward? Why aren't they following your lead? You have how many hours, not just yourself, how many hours between you and your, Peter Gregan and Pamela.
Pam what Popper.
Is Pamela's last name? Popper, yes.
Popper.
And, right, yes. And all the experts say, how many hours have gone into this?
Oh, thousands.
Would you say?
It's thousands.
Like thousands.
Yeah,
well,
thousands, many thousands. I have almost 2,000 hours in it myself.
Just yourself.
Yeah.
Well, all I and all the now the signatures in Michigan, we were talking about Pennsylvania and that the judge had ruled that it was unconstitutional, but there was a stay on returning to the Constitution, I presume, right?
Yeah, well, there was a stay. I'm of the opinion that that's why it's – yeah.
Go ahead. Please.
Well,
no.
I'm of the opinion that stay was issued in part because the one thing they really didn't do is they had a good case over there and they got a good ruling, a proper ruling. But, you know – they didn't really challenge the facts in a direct enough way. I think that's really a critical aspect. But, you know, I don't know. I don't really know. I haven't had a chance to review the stay order yet. But I'm very eager to do so. I thought the ruling was very well done, and I'd be interested to know what grounds that the judges ordered to stay on. I mean, I'm not sure what the state presented there. Like I said, I haven't had a chance to follow up, but it seems pretty clear to me.
I'm guessing political pressure. But we don't know, so that's just a guess. Nonetheless, the one in Michigan, though, I thought they kind of did it even better because they went in with 593,000 signatures. I really don't think even political pressure is going to upset that apple cart.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know what's going to happen in Michigan. I know that Whitmer is absolutely hell-bent on ensuring that she maintains power as the queen of the state. You know, I don't understand how it is that you can think as an elected official, because we are still going to have elections, you know, and this is what I asked the Republican Party in Ohio. You know, we got an election coming up. And you're ruling against the will, particularly in Ohio, because we have a Republican Party ruling against the will of its own base. What do they think is going to happen in the election? I mean, it's just dumb. But, you know, in Michigan as well, even though you got a Democratic governor up there, Michigan has gone back and forth a little bit over the years. I know they tend to lean Democratic. But, I mean, this shouldn't even be a right or left-wing issue. This is about freedom, and I can't believe that you'd so blatantly rule against the will of your people and, you know, expect that you're going to have any chance of you or your party staying in power. It seems insane to me. So I don't know what she's trying to get at. You know, I don't know what the game is here, but it just seems backwards to me.
Well, Ohio is the first state to actively push back against these regulations.
Yeah. Well,
I want to commend Ohio for stepping out as right on time.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, I am honored, and I really mean that. I am honored to work with some of these people in Ohio. We have some true patriots in this state. We have some wonderful people. And again, right, left, don't care. What we believe in is freedom, okay? We have the freedom to, as Americans, to protest. We should have the freedom to go to church. And we have the freedom to speak out, and we've exercised that freedom. We've got great people in Ohio. We have been speaking out about this for quite some time. The lawsuit that we're filing or have filed is really a manifestation of these patriotic people. My plaintiffs are amazing. They're wonderful people. They're regular people. You know, they're just people, just like me. I'm just a regular guy who just, I'm an attorney, and I got sick of it, and I got these plaintiffs, and we decided to file a suit and try and free our country. But, you know, the beautiful thing about it, and one of the things that Ohio's really led in and that I'm very proud of saying, is you got one regular guy attorney, a handful of regular plaintiffs, and because of the greatness of our Constitution, the greatness of our nation, we legitimately have a chance to stop this nonsense. That's what we're fighting to preserve. We're fighting to preserve a system that would facilitate regular people actually having the chance to stand up for their rights and having a shot to win. So that's worth fighting for. I'm very excited about that.
Well, I have to tell you, coming from a vaccine-aware perspective, this is my issue has been for 10 years. I just updated my blog to say evidence, evidence, evidence. Why doesn't it matter? You know, because we have been showing evidence directly from the CDC, the components, the reactions, the schedule. It's all you need to know to stop it in its tracks. We have intent too, but you don't even need intent. Just the facts from the CDC's website should cancel this entire program. So I don't know what to say. We've been in this situation, all of us who are in this particular fight. We've seen the science is all on our side. We have all the evidence one could possibly want or need. And yet you take it to your legislators and there is an unspoken conspiracy to ignore it. Just ignore it.
Well,
I have gotten the most fanciful responses to what it is I've sent them. I literally am holding my head. Really, that's your response to what I just told you. Okay, you know?
Yeah, no, I certainly understand that and see that. I will tell you some of the responses that I'm hearing and some of the things that I'm dealing with in this lawsuit are, they fall under that same category of just absolutely mind-blowing. You know, I mean, listen, the bottom line is that our lawsuit is alleged, and we believe that there's no emergency. We believe that the data that is being presented is either false or misleading. And we believe that because of that, all the actions taken based on that false and misleading data are arbitrary and capricious and unconstitutional. It's pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward. I mean, there's a lot more to it in the complaint, and there's a lot of discussion about different things, but ultimately it kind of boils down to that, right? This shouldn't be complicated. I don't know why we're making this complicated. The reality is just this simple. Show us the facts. Let's look at the facts. If it shows in an unbiased way that there's truly some sort of a big danger here, well, then, you know, we go away. We're wrong. But show us the facts, right? I mean, that's not real complicated. That's how you win this. That's how you make us go away. Show us the facts. But no, we're going to keep hiding. We're going to keep obfuscating. Well, why would you do that if you didn't have anything to hide? And that's kind of where I keep coming back to.
Why I opened the show with that, the potential of being told that documents don't exist that in fact do exist. That would be the largest difficulty I could see, is that you couldn't get a, just like this ICANN lawsuit where they said they had no tests. They had done no tests in 30 years. You know, the same agency that says that had a garbage party when they had test results they didn't like. They just threw them all in the garbage. They called everybody and said, okay, everybody bring your documents, and they shredded them all, you know? So this is, as I say, it's hard. They're just tricky. What can I say? They're very tricky, and they have no conscience. So I agree that show me the science, you know, show me the evidence that there is any level of emergency. We have all of that pretty much right now, simply because these states could not have called to open up their once, you know, to go back to the old normal. That's what they've,
yeah.
They haven't said it that way, but they should say it that way, and we should clamor for the old normal, you know?
Absolutely.
I don't know. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, anyway,
you know, the old normal.
Go ahead, please.
The old normal was constitutional, at least. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would say there were a lot of freedoms that should have been more readily recognized in the old normal, but this is absurd. This is Venezuela. This is not even close to constitutional or legal, and there's no excuse for it. So, I mean, I'll take the old normal anytime, at least over this. So we'll get there, though. I have total belief that we'll get there. It may take a little bit of work to do so.
Well, I initially wrote to Pam Popper saying, I live in New York and I want to follow your lead. And then I found out that Peter Bregan also lives in New York. Do you know any attorneys who live here who might be interested in pursuing this? Is there a kind of a clearinghouse of people, attorneys from around the United States who are brave like you, because brave people are punished? Are they willing to fight for their children and their children's children by actively pursuing justice, as you have done? Are there others like you?
Well, I will tell you what. I have had, in the last couple of weeks, a number of people reached out to me. And I'm actually grateful to see that. It's still a remarkably small number compared to what there should be. But these are good people, and they seem to be good people. I'm trying very hard right now. We created a case that we hoped would be able to be used elsewhere. And I'm trying very hard to ensure that that is something that can happen. But the biggest problem I'm running into is that I'm around the clock. I couldn't be busier. And so it is tough for me to be everywhere and do everything. That said, there seem to be a few, and we're working on getting some sort of an infrastructure developed where I can, you know, find out whether they're legitimate and say, hey, these are good people or not. I mean, not that I'm the guy that really should be, you know, I'm not the clearinghouse for it. I mean, if you can find a lawyer and they want to do it, by all means, let them do it. But we're working on trying to help people find contacts with other lawyers that would be willing to do this. And but it's just a process. I mean, we're very grassroots. You got to understand, none of us, there's no giant corporate sponsors or anything like that. We're just regular people. Regular people fighting for a cause. So, you know, we don't have an endless budget. We can't call our team and have them throw together a huge website with all the bells and whistles. You know, we put out press releases, and, you know, if anybody picks them up, great. But, you know, we're just regular people. And, you know, the only reason that people are hearing about us is because of people like you who are actually willing to report the truth.
Well, you are the person of the week from the, I don't know, the Solaris report named you person of the week. And
well,
Public
quite
Advocate
an honor.
Radio is going to name you the person of this week, okay? Because you're doing is so essential. The question is now what the outcome of this. This can be used as, what do you call that, when some ruling has passed?
Precedent?
Some judge. Precedent, thank you. This can be used as a precedent?
Yeah, well, that's certainly the hope. You know, we're going to lay this out, and as we go through, I'm trying to make everything public, right? So people can look at it, they can see what we're doing, they can, you know, use our approach or not. My belief is that, you know, as we go forward, how far that precedent reaches depends a little bit on the other side. But yeah, I mean, if this ends up in the Supreme Court, it affects the whole country, right? So if we set a precedent there, it affects the whole country. If we win in the district court, well, it sets a precedent there. So how far and wide that reaches, I don't know. But in any event, people will at least be able to look at the case and say, here's what worked, here's what didn't. And it'll be a lot cheaper to file after this, right? I mean, this case, I've got quite a bit of donated time in it, and that's okay. I'm honored to do it. But this case took all that time. If I wouldn't have done that, if the people that are helping me wouldn't have donated so much time, and I've got so many doctors and experts who have given so much of their time, it's amazing, amazing people who just believe in our country and believe in our freedom. They've given so much of their time for this cause for nothing, no money whatsoever, because we don't have a budget. So, you know, these people have helped us put together this case. Now, the next person that files this suit won't have to find these people, won't have to dig into this. We're going to put – it's already there. So as we go to discovery, what we find in discovery should be made available for anyone. And, you know, if you – even if our precedent doesn't affect you directly or it never gets that far, you can still use our data. You can use our discovery. You can use our structure. It's all going to be made public. It's already all made public. So, you know, run with it. And it'll be a lot cheaper to create that when you can plop your name on something and just make a few changes rather than kind of coming up with the whole thing from scratch.
Right. And that's actually why I brought up Sheriff Mack's case, because that case has set a precedent. Both of these statements are just completely pertain. I can't help but wonder, did he know what was coming in the future? I don't particularly see them as uber relevant to the case he was ruling on. Okay. So it's kind of like he could see into the future what was coming. A lot of people knew what was coming. Certainly the lockstep plan lets you know that it's unfolding just as the lockstep plan is dictates it should. So there certainly was a plan. If it was not centered around a virus, it was a plan that was intended to be enacted at some point, you know?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that this was planned for.
Right. Well, yeah, it's written. Yeah. But so I'm going to send you everything that I've gathered for you, which is sizable. And I hope that it is helpful and useful. I definitely am interested in any lawyer out there in New York who would be interested in looking into what Tom Rentz and all of his friends and allies have achieved. Please tell us where you are in this lawsuit. What phase of the lawsuit are you in?
Well, we have filed for a preliminary injunction, and we've also filed our complaint, and we are at the discovery stage. We were designated complex, so discovery would start early in the case, which is wonderful because discovery is everything in this case. Now, we're trying to right now get the state to actually honor their obligations under discovery. We're hopeful that'll happen. And, you know, from there, we get this preliminary injunction hearing and then the rest of the trial. But God willing, we're able to get the discovery that's necessary to have a proper preliminary injunction hearing in the very near future. And, you know, we go from there. I believe we've got a good chance at getting that injunction.
An injunction means what? What does injunction mean?
Oh, I'm sorry. An injunction is an order from the court to stop someone from doing something or to force them to do something. We're asking for an injunction, which means we're saying, hey, court, can you tell these guys that this behavior is unconstitutional and they can't do it anymore? We'd love to see an injunction against the emergency declaration completely, because that would mean that the emergency goes away and all the orders under it are gone. So at that point, we should be relatively back to normal, assuming that we don't have too many crazy people that are still trying to push this nonsense.
Now, haven't we been persistently under an emergency declaration at least since the H1N1 fiasco? I'll tell you why I bring this up. The a woman's child was vaccinated in school against her wishes, and she sued and she won, but the health department came back and said, oh, you lose, and she did lose when they came back and appealed, saying that the emergency had never been lifted from the time of the H1N1. Therefore, the fact that this happened, she loses, and she did lose. So I don't think that emergency had ever – that was Parker was the name of the suit. It was here in New York State. I can look up information about that.
Well, I don't know you know, in New York State, whether or not they had issued or what the status of any emergency declarations are in the state.
Well, no, he was referring to the federal emergency. He was not referring to just a New York State emergency, but it just so happened to transpire in New York State.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Honestly, I have not looked at the H1N1 emergency orders. The powers that are being used at the state level are being done under the state emergency. I'm not saying that it's not relevant.
I see.
I'm personally of the opinion that any emergency declaration should have to be justified and should, you know, they're reviewable. We have a case from the Supreme Court that says that they are reviewable. So, you know, I don't know what federal emergency declarations are out there that are or are not alive at the moment. But I know mm-hmm. that in any event, what's happening in Ohio and in many of the states is being done under state emergency declarations and state emergency powers. And I do know that it is my very firm opinion that those are absolutely unconstitutional as they've been implemented.
Right. Well, what else would you like to talk about? I mean, what should people know? What do you want people to know so that they step out, they emulate what you're doing? What do you want lawyers to know? Because those are the ones we need.
Well, the biggest thing that I really, you know, people keep asking me, what can I do, right? And I'm glad you gave me the opportunity to talk about that, because what can I do is such an important question, right? And people, when I say this, and I want to premise this, because everybody thinks that I'm just kind of blowing them off, but I'm not. For the last 6 months, we've had a nonstop drumbeat narrative from these same people every day telling us we're all going to die from this terrible disease. You got to wear a mask. You got to do this. You got to do that. It's terrible. The world's coming to an end. There are a lot of very smart, very competent people who are very scared at the moment. And it's not because they're silly. It's not because they're dumb. It's because they've been lied to for 6 months by people who are very good at lying. Okay? We need, and I can't stress that enough, to communicate and ensure that there is another narrative. People need to be able to hear the truth. So we need to talk to each other. We need to share with people what's going on. Now, that doesn't mean you go out and say, hey, you're an idiot. You're wearing a mask. It doesn't mean that at all. You've got to be respectful. You've got to talk to people in a way where they will listen, where they will hear you. Because if you just tell someone that they're ignorant, they're going to shut down and the conversation's over. But we need to talk. We need to share information. Everything in my case is cited. It's all from the CDC and various other, you know, such entities. So you can't argue with it. I'm using their words and their data in my case. But people don't know that, because their data and their the words that they use publicly are two totally different things. When they go on TV, they say one thing, but they write something totally different so that they can deny it. Say, well, we got plausible deniability. So, but people need to see that. No one goes and researches this. No one goes and looks it up. We got to share this information. We got to share what's going on. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's just fact. It's just reality. Governor DeWine in Ohio likes to keep saying that he follows the facts, and the facts are the facts. Well, the facts are the facts, and the facts are not what you're saying. And we need people to hear that. They need to know that, yes, this is a real disease, and yes, it has and will kill people. But so is the flu, and we don't shut the world down for that. And the bottom line is that regardless of your political affiliation or anything else, this has been overblown by a dramatic amount, and now it's being used. And there's no excuse for it, and we got to help people. If I win the case tomorrow and we don't take some steps to educate people, then I still got 150 million Americans too scared to come out of their house without a mask on. And that is not getting back to normal. So we got to educate. We got to share. We got to be in touch with as many people as possible. That's why I'm doing shows like this, because, you know, my clients asked me to help try and free our country. Well, part of that means helping to educate people about what's really going on. So I'm doing this. Yeah. So I guess the one thing I want people to know is how important education and outreach in a respectful way is. I can't stress that enough. The other thing I want people to know is I think people should be asking themselves, you know, I don't know how many people you know that have died or that you thought died from COVID-19. In most of the country, people don't know anyone. I suppose in New York City, people will say that they know someone. I mean, they certainly did their best in New York to raise the death toll. That said, my first question I'd ask is, are you sure that they died from that? Because the test doesn't work and they lied about the numbers. But the second question I would ask is, well, do you think that it's worth shutting down our country in the way that we have? And I think what you need to think about is think about what we're doing to our children. I've seen preschoolers being forced to wear masks and being told that they need to socially distance. A 3 or 4 year old child does not know what social distancing is. The only way to get little Sally to stay away from little Billy is to tell her that little Billy has germs and will kill her if she gets close. Do we really want to do that to our kids? Do we want to scare them like that? What kind of damage are we doing? What kind of damage are we doing, particularly in the minority communities, where school is a safe spot, where for the kids who live in bad homes, you know, school that we've shut down now, it's a safe spot. It's the one spot where they're going to get a good meal. What are we doing to them? What are we doing to our seniors who are dying alone in nursing homes, who aren't allowed to say goodbye to their loved ones, who even in hospice may not have the chance to say goodbye to their family? How can you tell me that it's not a senior's personal decision to determine what kind of risk they want to take in deciding whether to say goodbye to loved ones? It's discrimination. It's sickening. It's horrible. So is this worth it? And, you know, maybe you don't care about any of these things. Maybe you don't care about the rights we're losing now. But are you going to care when the next governor comes along and he takes away something you care about? You know, what if you're trying to go and march for something and you can't? I support the right of people to assemble for any reason, as long as they assemble lawfully. What if you can't assemble? What if you can't march? What if you can't have a protest? Are you going to care then? What do you got to lose before you care? And that's really, I think, the other thing that I'd like people to think about.
Well, I think the Philippines stands as a good example of how bad it can get, and don't think it can't get that bad. It is that bad right now, just in another country. You know, you're shot if your mask is not properly on your face. So
that's amazing.
That's the end all.
That
is
amazing.
Well, there's also, you know, the confusion that they've imposed. The people who provide the bricks to be thrown through the windows under saying these are peaceful protests. Well, they're not if people are throwing bricks and lighting things on fire. And where these people are, the police are told to stand down. In England, where they are actually peaceful protesters, I was watching the whole thing live. They're peaceful protesters. The ones here are rioters. But what's happening to them is they're getting bloodied with the billy clubs. The actual peaceful protesters are getting billy clubbed, and the non-peaceful rioters are the cops are being told to stand down. What's the lesson here? You know what? This is a really bad scenario, and that's, I'm talking about just two countries here, England and the United States. But I don't know what to say.
Well, you don't have to go
I
that
really
far.
Wish I did.
You don't have to go that go far ahead. For an example, right? I mean, so we're talking about freedom of assembly. Now, I don't care if you're a protester or not. You have the right to assemble, okay? Now, I think that as soon as you start throwing bricks or anything like that, you've destroyed the credibility of what you're standing for. I believe Martin Luther King was a brilliant guy. The idea of protesting peacefully and peacefully advocating for your rights is the way that it's got to be done. And he's the guy that should be emulated, okay? So that said, peaceful protesting, I'm all for it. That said, a protest is a form of assembly, right? You got people coming together for a common purpose. In the same way, going to church, you're coming together for a common purpose. Now, in one, the purpose is free speech. The other is the free exercise of our religion. both are First Amendment, and freedom of assembly is First Amendment. What I don't understand is how the state can say that one group can assemble but the other can't. That's really been something that's been bothersome to me in this whole thing. I think, you know, you've got to have equal protection of the laws. We're all supposed to be treated as equals under the law, and that's not happening here. We've got certain groups that are being told that that they can't get together to pray, but you can get together to protest, and that doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I called a private club I belong to, and I had my birthday party there, and when I got there, they insisted we all wear masks, and they took everybody's temperature, they took their name, address, and phone number, and then we could eat. I called the club, and I said, isn't being a club, don't you make your own rules? Isn't that the entire purpose of being a club? And they said to me, well, it's a business, too, because we serve food. Therefore, we have to, I don't know. I just thought the one place I could go and not have to abide these regulations would be a place that makes their own rules. But he said no.
Well, it's New York is pretty well known for not being a place that really embraces the free market or the freedom of the organizations to do their thing. I mean, you guys, from what I understand, and I'm not licensed in New York and don't practice in New York, but from what I understand, there's a lot of regulation in New York. And I wish that was a surprise to me. It's not. But, you know, it's just another example of the total lack of respect for people to gather and assemble for various purposes, total lack of respect for people to make decisions in a private organization. Why does the government need to run all this? Why is it their business? I don't know. I think the whole thing is nonsense. So,
well, I took every other month we took a stand on the steps of City Hall about vaccines. And I never had a problem reserving the steps. I had never had a problem speaking about this issue. Now nobody can get access to the steps of City Hall, public property, but you cannot get access to it.
You know, they do have the right under the law to create, to limit the time and place at which you're allowed to, you know, assemble and do some of these things. But, you know, I don't know. You would think that that would not be a place that they would limit. I certainly don't know why or how they're justifying that. I mean, I'm sure they've got some sort of logic to it. I haven't seen the order, but, you know, they just want to isolate themselves from the people. That seems to be the goal everywhere, is let's isolate ourselves from the people and try and pretend that there's no problems. And that way, particularly when the news media shows up, we can avoid them seeing anybody protesting or complaining about our behavior. So that's an interesting thing.
Well, I just read New York City businesses, schools to close Wednesday. Somebody just sent that to me.
They're going to shut you guys back down?
New York City businesses, schools close Wednesday in 9 zip codes if approved by the state. I don't know why those 9 zip codes. I would have to read. Yeah.
Well, you do understand that they've moved to testing in cases because the test doesn't work. We get false positives all the time. And the inventor of the PCR test won Nobel Prize for it and actually specifically said it's a terrible test for a diagnosis of disease. It's a great lab test, but it's a terrible test for diagnosis of disease. It doesn't work. We have tons of evidence from the CDC and everywhere else, and I've had all sorts of these doctors and other people tell me it's just not a good test. You know, but it really does justify the continuation of this emergency nonsense, which is why it's there, right? We just keep testing, and that that'll back us up doing what we're doing, and because we're going to keep getting positives, and so then we can shut us back down again. I mean, it's really insidious, and it's a shame, and it's amazing that they've gotten away with it this long, and I really cannot wait to see this shut down.
Yes, I agree, and thank you for everything you're doing to make that a reality. Thank you very, very much. Is there anything else you'd like to add to this conversation? I agree with you. I tell people all the time, whatever you do, don't take that test.
Yeah.
What
well,
is it,
they 90, are
90% or more inaccurate?
You know, it depends, and I'll tell you. You know why it depends? It depends because there's no standard set by the CDC for what it means to be positive. There are over 100 different manufacturers of these tests, all authorized under emergency powers by the FDA, and each individual manufacturer decides what it means to have COVID-19. It's just totally based on the test. There's no standards, there's nothing. So, you know, I can't even tell you how many false positives or how many inaccuracies, because it totally depends on the test. There's no standardization. We actually have a quote in our complaint from a CDC document or an FDA document that from one of the tests that were approved. And it says this test was created with no virus isolate of the SARS-CoV-2 virus available. So they just put together some stuff as a substitute and said it's close enough. I mean, it's just unbelievable. The tests are absolute garbage. And, you know, what happened was is the case fatality rate kept dropping, and it didn't justify what they were doing anymore, so they had to come up with something else. Well, tests are perfect because they can just claim cases right and left. There's no standards for cases. There's no standards for the testing, so we're just claiming everything is COVID-19. Plus, at this point, it's really interesting. COVID-19 cured influenza in Colorado. There's a wonderful graph that a friend of mine, a scientist, was able to pull from the data in Colorado, and it showed that COVID-19 in Colorado, once we started getting an extra 20% reimbursement for COVID cases, all the flu cases went away. And it's because the symptoms are so close and there's no real diagnosis for COVID. You know, there's no lab test that's actually useful. So they just don't test for flu. And instead, it's, you know, they get more money for anyone that's hospitalized with the flu as long as they don't test and they can say it's COVID. It's unbelievable. It's just
right.
Terrifying. So, it's an honor to do this. It's a privilege to be able to stand up for our rights and to be able to fight for our people. It's been a great privilege to do this, and I really praying that I'm able to do it well. So we're doing everything we can to do that, and I guess we'll find out how it goes coming up, but God willing, we'll be able to get some truth out there and kind of go from there.
Right. Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much, Tom Renz, attorney in Ohio, for all of your heroic efforts. And, you know, everybody is acknowledging your contribution and the fact that you came up with this idea of how to proceed. And it's the most likely to prevail. If anybody can see the forest through the trees or just see the trees themselves, you should prevail, you know, you should. So let's hope that you do, and hope that lawyers in other states will feel moved. Your win will encourage them, believe me. So everybody should support this effort, because Tom Renz's win will get other states and other lawyers in other states to act likewise. So he's stepping out, he's taking all the heat for it, and the least we can do is support him in his efforts. If you're not going to do that, then I want you to support your local food bank, because people are starving. They're not putting these people on television, but I found an article, a local paper reporting 28 block long line for food in my neighborhood. So these, you don't realize people are actually starving right now. So support Tom or support your local food bank, but don't do nothing.
We need activists right now. We've got to fight for our freedoms. If we don't fight for them, they'll be gone.
Well, I also, if it's okay, I want to share a leaflet. It's a two, it prints out on two sides of one paper, and it's CV19-FactNotFear. And I'll put that link also, tinyurl.com/CV19-FactNotFear, and you can distribute that wherever. This is October Vaccine Injury Awareness Month, so alerting people to the fact that tests are unreliable and the mainstream media is reporting them as contaminated, okay? That's important. That's a medical product. And, of course, with this most untoward vaccine coming at all of us, it's a golden opportunity to educate people about vaccination. Okay. That's all I have to say. So thanks again,
thank
comrades.
You so much.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Sally, and I look forward to talking with you in the future.
Okay, I'll send you all those documents, I promise. Okay, cheerio.
I look forward to it. Goodbye.
Okay, bye. You've been listening to Public Advocate Radio, and I have just interviewed one heck of a public advocate, have I not? Okay, Sally Elcordy signing off. My guest was Tom Renz.